Witches of the East. They were, some say they were astrologers. I would think more or less they were probably astronomers because they studied the skies. And while there were people that, were astrologers and they studied the heavens and they came up with, you know, the horoscopes and the astrological signs and all those kinds of things that people follow, you know, it's like, well, what should I do today? Theirs was a deeper purpose, I believe, because they were looking to see what was going on in the world. And where are we in this time? And having had all these wise books, they were learned men. They were wise men. They were smart. And magi is where we get the word magician or magic. And it's not just this kind of like David Copperfield or, you know, pick your Harry Houdini, pick your magician. But it has to do more with understanding nature and some scientific applications. You know, they were, throughout history, you've seen some of them become alchemists, which were kind of wacky people that tried to turn regular old elements into gold. But they were those that worked with the different elements and saw how they interacted and reacted with other things. And these guys were very smart. They were book learned. They looked at things in nature. They looked in things in chemistry. They were pretty wealthy. They were pretty wealthy to come down and to have gold, which, of course, you know, that's been the standard for how long? You know, you got to have gold. We don't have the gold standard here in the United States any longer, but gold is still something that is so important to have. We value it highly. It's one of the most precious metals that we have that we can still trade with. People want gold. They had amassed, I don't know how much they brought. You know, we see the little nativity scene, or we see the movie, you know, the three kings come in, the three magi, the three wise men. They come in with this little box. I don't know if it was that much or if it was how much it was. I think it was probably more than just a little box. And then the frankincense, that was used in a priestly way, the incense. And it signifies God being in the temple, God being in the holy place, God being in the church. There's many churches, high churches, that still have the incense. You've seen where they swing the censer back and forth, and the smoke comes out. And it smells pretty darn good. It smells pretty good to me, though. And then there's the myrrh, which was an oil, an ointment. That's what what Mary had, the alabaster jar of perfume, which would have been myrrh poured out. And it was an oil that was used for fragrance, but it was more, it's very expensive, and it was used in preparation for burial. So that the body, as it began to go through its change, it would smell a little bit better as people came to pay their respects and do what they do. So these guys, these wise men, these princes, came and they brought gold, they brought frankincense, and they brought myrrh. And remember, I've said before that Jesus was born and wrapped in swaddling clothes. He was born ready for burial. You know, if that was because of, was that the tradition that they did? Because of mortality rates in that time, that it was like, you know, we're going to wrap this baby up, number one, because we want him or her to be warm, and in that, plus how long are they going to be around? Now, the wise men, coming from an area maybe around Persia, how long would it have taken for them to come down from Persia down to Israel?
800 miles.
Yeah. And if they're coming on horseback or camel, more than likely camelback, so they could have a drink every time they... Camelback, if you don't know what that is, I'm sorry. It's like our bottles are camelbacks, our water bottles, and they've got some that actually go on your back with a straw, so if you're hiking or riding or working. Anyway, these people would have traveled by camel, more than likely, and possibly in a caravan, because it's safer in that time, it's safer to go in numbers than it is to go through this wilderness of sand and rock and forest and whatever else they were finding along their way to get to that area in Jerusalem. It was a lot safer to travel in a larger group. So they made their way. It says they left when they saw the star in the east. Some say that they thought it was an angel. It was an angel that they followed. But I've seen other where they take the Venus, I believe it's Venus and Mars, and when there's this, they call it a conference or convergence in the heavens, and when they line up and then the sun hits it from the other side of the earth, and it just gets incredibly bright because the sun is hitting these two objects at relatively the same time, and it just, it's like having two flashlights shining at your face, you know, or bright lights, you know, going from regular lights on your car to brights. It just increases the, and I kind of think that's what it was, you know, because these were guys that would watch that thing. But it led them to Bethlehem. They knew where they were going. They knew where they were going. Herod had no idea where this baby was going to be born. He didn't know where the baby was going to be born. When they left, Jesus was an infant. He had just been born. But by the time he arrived, he was somewhere between 2, and some say even, which I disagree with, 20. But the word for child would indicate that he's definitely not an infant. Like, how many words do we have to describe a newborn baby? You know, newborn, infant, you know, baby, toddler, you know, it goes, there's probably more. There's more words to describe the different stages of a child's growing. And this particular word here for child would indicate that he's probably a toddler. He was definitely within walking age. He's getting around. He's grabbing onto things. And Mary's probably saying, no, 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 put that down. They've got to put everything up high so he doesn't pull it down and that sort of thing. I guess. I don't know. I wasn't there.
That's where those little angles come to attach cabinets to walls.
Exactly, yeah. They were making sure the cabinets wouldn't open. They were putting the little gate up at the top of the stairs so that Jesus didn't roll down and that sort of thing. So when the Magi showed up, he was an older child. So it's not that same story. We know that it's not the same thing that we see in all the different church Christmas pageants that we've seen. We're all, here they come in. You know, some of the movies that we've seen, we're all, here they come in now. Here come the wise men on their camels with all their gifts. It was much later. A couple of years. 18 to 24 months later. Now, when I hear this thing of Jesus being poor, you know, he was poor. He was poor. Mary and Joseph were poor. They couldn't stay anywhere when he was born. No, when they went to Bethlehem, because that's where Joseph was from, they went there for the census, because there was a census that was called. They wanted to count the people who were in or from given areas within the Roman Empire, within Israel. And so he went to the land of his heritage, where he was from, where his people were from, to register for the census. When they got there, because there were so many people who had to go to their hometown, there was no place to stay. All the hotels were full. If they'd have gone on to, you know, Trivago or one of those sites, they could have registered a heck of a lot earlier and said, okay, we need a room. You know, what do you, well, we want one overlooking the pool. You know, we want a place that supplies breakfast in the morning. But they got there late and there was no place to stay. It wasn't because they were poor. Joseph was a carpenter. You know, he may not have had a whole lot of money, but it wasn't this destitute, homeless person. When the Magi came, God the Father provided his child with everything that he would need for later on in life. In that gold. We don't see Jesus having to work in his ministry. I believe that that came for him. It was for his family. It was for him to take care of everything in the ministry. God the Father provided it. And he continues to provide for us. I want to talk about Herod a little bit. Because I mentioned that Herod was a little bit angry. Yeah, paranoid. That's a good word. When Herod heard of this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. When Herod heard about this baby, this Messiah, this King of Kings, this King of the Jews that was being born, or had been born, he was troubled. Gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And because of his paranoia, because of his wanting to continue in his position of power, he acted in a very similar way as to what Pharaoh did in Egypt. When Pharaoh saw how great and powerful the Jews were becoming, the Hebrew slaves were becoming, they were numbering in the millions at that time. There were many, many slaves. And if they had risen up, they may have been able to overthrow. If there was a slave rebellion, they would have been able to overthrow the Egyptians, possibly. And Pharaoh put out that edict to have all of the male children, 2 years and younger, or the newborns, the male infants, 2 years and younger, put to death. And Moses was among that group, but he was saved. Come back to Jesus, or come up to that time when Jesus was born. And it's eerily similar. That here's Jesus is born. Somebody's really worried about it, wants to put an end to it, so he puts out the edict that says all children in Bethlehem, in this area, 2 years and younger, need to be put to death. Why did he say 2 years? Because that's when they first saw the star. So he wanted to be safe and say, okay, well, here's the time when they saw the star from the east and started their journey, and here's what day it is now. So, and then by the time we all get down there and we find all these kids, and you know, and I think is that the Day of the Innocents, I think it is in the high holy church, and the Bible talks about that. The cry from Bethlehem and those being put to death. And I was watching a program during Christmas time, and where they think they may have found an area around Bethlehem where people were buried various ages. So it's one of those things that happen. Now, where was I?
Herod and Pharaoh.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. So Herod said he wanted to go worship him, which he was conniving. He didn't really want to go down there and worship the baby Jesus or the infant or the child. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshipped him. They opened their treasures. And then in verse 12 it says, having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way. So they knew how to interpret dreams. They knew the times and the seasons. They knew the stars. They knew the ways. They were warned. Don't go back. Don't go the way you came. Herod's coming down here. Go out and around. And it was shortly after that that Joseph gathered up Jesus and Mary and went down to Egypt to hide. Mm-hmm. And if God has a plan, there is no one that can stop it. No one can thwart it. People have said, oh, if there was something down, if there was a barrier between Israel and Egypt, Jesus would have died. Moses didn't die. God protected Moses. God protected Jesus. God will see us through where we are at any given moment. And I've shared this with people that, you know, we're in the end times. We've been in the end times since Jesus came, was crucified, dead, and buried, and rose again, ascended to heaven. We're waiting for him to come back at the end of the day, at the end of the sixth day, when he comes back. We've been in the end times for a long time, some 2,000 years, a little over. And the Bible talks about some trials and tribulations coming. That it's not all unicorns and rainbows and, you know, sugar plum fairies and just beautiful things and butterflies and birds singing. There's some trouble coming. There's trouble ahead. And the prophet, God told the prophet, if you cannot walk with men on foot, how will you be able to contend with those on horseback? And so, right now, our troubles may be like, do you understand? We're walking with people on foot. We're fighting against. That's what the struggle is like. We're struggling with someone that's on our same level. But there's a time coming when there are others who believe that they are greater than we. They have a position of authority. They have a position in this earth, a higher place, a position of authority over us. And as believers, we can be persecuted. It's happening in other parts of the world. If your eyes are open, if your ears are open, you can see the beginnings of that more and more. With the rise of atheism or anti-theism, the people putting down Christians and more and more. And it's not just the being teased. It's not just being teased. It's being targeted more and more in this country. Not like they're seeing in other parts of the world. But God still uses those people in other parts of the world. We've seen miracles happen. We've seen people being saved because Christians in other parts of the world take a stand. And they are willing, just like 100 years earlier in this earth, when Christians were being put to death in places like Russia, when priests and entire congregations were being put to death because of their faith in God and their belief in Jesus Christ. People are having a difficult time these days with religion. we look here. I mean, churches, there's some churches that are growing, and there's some churches that are just, man, it's, people are just turning away from the spiritual. They're turning away from the things of God. So God protected Moses. He protected Jesus. And I believe he's going to protect you and I, no matter where we are. If we're getting ready to go onto the table to have bypass surgery, to have open heart surgery, in our jobs, in our homes, in our neighborhoods, he's going to protect us. And even if trouble comes, even if trials and tribulations come, as we talked about over the last four Sundays with peace, or with hope and peace and joy and love, even if we have those trials and tribulations, we still have hope. Because we can't give up hope. We don't have to worry about tomorrow because he gives us that bright hope for tomorrow. We don't have to worry about it. We have hope. He gives us peace. Peace for today. Peace that passes all understanding. And then that brings about a joy unspeakable and full of glory. He gives us a hope. Jesus, the hope, the anchor for our soul, no matter what is happening. Peace that passes understanding. I don't understand. Why am I feeling this peace? It's not that I'm mad, like crazy or insane. Just have a peace. I trust the Lord. And that brings joy. Because when we lay our head down at night, we have hope for tomorrow. We lay our head down tonight and we say, Lord, today is done. I sleep in your peace, having bright hope for tomorrow, and I know that joy comes in the morning. Even if we cry ourselves to sleep because things didn't work out, or like Tammy is in so much pain, we can say, no, joy comes in the morning. And it's all wrapped up in love. There are those around us who are waiting for their epiphany. They don't know it. But they are. Even as, man, I turned my back on God when I was a teenager. At 13, I was done. I walked away. And it wasn't until about 19, 20, in that age group, I started to look. Started to see where I was at. Started to see what was happening in my life. Yeah. And I had that epiphany where I saw Mom and Dad's Bible, the one that they got on their wedding. And I had been praying and saying, God, if you're real, show me that you're real. Show me that you're real and show me there's more to my life than just getting high, getting drunk, getting laid, and getting sick. Show me that there's more to it than that. And when I went to work the following day, I had a hangover, I'll admit it. When I went to work the following day, there were three guys, and each one of them, I was working as a custodian in a Kmart, and I had run the entire store. And there were three guys that I knew, one that worked in the warehouse, one that worked in sporting goods, and another one that worked out in the garden center. And each one of those three guys on the same day invited me to go to church. Cool. Say, you want to go to church with me? We haven't been talking about anything. Just asked me to go to church.
That's good.
And so I said, yeah, of course. I'll go with you. And so on one Sunday, I went to three different services. Grace Bible Church, Calvary Chapel, and a Salvation Army Church. Wow. On the very same day. Then I went down to that Christian bookstore to Calvary, what was it called? Oh, can't remember the name of the church. I went down and I bought me a new Bible. The one church I went to the past, I found, hey, he's using what's called an NIV. Okay, I'll get that one because I could understand what he was saying. And then I started going to a church, and I was going to three, four services on Sunday, a service on Wednesday night, the concert's on Friday night, a home group on Monday or Tuesday. Just couldn't get enough listening to Christian radio, getting tapes, and just learning more and more and more. Mm-hmm. Then, like Ephesus, the church at Ephesus, when they forgot their first love and began to wander away a little bit, didn't take that long. But that was when I got most of my learning done. Here, heading on. The rest of the time has been learning when God blessed me with Tammy, I started to learn a lot. Y'all have no idea how smart she is, how strong she really is. Yeah, I've learned so much. And then from all of you and those who aren't here, I've learned a lot. So we don't want to be like Herod. We don't want to be like Herod, being jealous of one another, being jealous of others. We don't want to worry, because there are those around us who have seen to it that we have provision, even if we don't know it. How it works out. I want to pray, Father, there are those we know who've been a part of our body on a weekly basis, who, because of the move and for whatever reason, living on another side of town, can no longer be a part of our small body here. But they're being affected by the shutdown. And so I just want to pray, Father, that you would be their provider.
Yes, Lord.
Lord, through us, through their new church, through people that they meet, because there's a time coming when we will all find ourselves in need, but we know that you are a provider. So just ask that you would bring provision to them. And people maybe that each one of us know who work in some capacity, would you be their provider? So in these, maybe today, the coming days or the coming weeks, could you and I maybe have some more aha moments, more epiphany, to see Jesus more. And hearts would be softened, our own hearts would be made softer, more pliable, more malleable. That he could work in us and work through us. I mean, y'all got it together, that your hearts are more pliable and malleable, more in the potter's hands. You know, I see other people, and I say, wow, they're soft in their heart. They're willing in their heart. they really are in the potter's hands. They really are. You ever say, keep me off that wheel? Keep me off. I don't want to go through that now. You know, don't put me on that wheel. Don't work this clay. When our heart is stone. Yeah. So. Yeah. She, y'all know she gets canker sores and has dealt with them her whole life. She's got issues with her stomach, her tummy, and her intestinal area that is genetic. Father dealt with it. She's had to deal with it pretty much her whole life. And we were texting on Friday, and she told me she had 9 canker sores. And then this morning she said 15. I said, what? 15. 15 what? 15 sores. And you see, when she gets up in the morning, I can see, you know, swollen. And yeah. So if you all wouldn't mind praying for the girl.
Are we?